5 p.m. We say hello to Richard Deitch. His work can be found at The Athletic. Richard, how you doing? Happy New Year.
You can't say frugal McDougal a lot. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it is definitely unique. It stands out, and it's something you should be able to remember. So how are things with you?
Well, better with me than with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are struggling here in my fine city. But things are good. No complaints. It's cold. It's cold in the Great White North here. We're looking at 15, 16-degree temperatures today.
It's ironic that you bring that up, because Willie and I were – We were thinking about you yesterday, because obviously the Predators just came off their longest road trip of the year, which happened to be up in Toronto in the middle of that trip, and Predators shut them out 4-0. And like you said, things are not great at this particular moment, and you know how that landscape is up there. Now that you've been up there, Willie experienced it for a short amount of time. They eat, drink, and everything, Maple Leafs. Hockey.
Because they're good. I mean,
right.
they have a great team.
So how crazy is it? You're up there every day. How crazy is it every day?
Well, I mean, you know, hockey is far and away the sport of Canada. And in the city of Toronto, it's a hockey mad city for sure. They're into the Raptors as well and the Jays when they play well. But, you know, Canada, hockey is cultural in Canada. It goes beyond sports. It's sort of ingrained in what the country's, you know, ethos and philosophy is about. And you're right, the Leafs are good. The question is, at least this moment, what does that mean when the Lightning are clearly better than them? And I think there are teams in the Western Conference, including the Preds and the Jets, that are better than the Leafs. So they're going to have a big decision in the next couple of weeks. You know, do they decide to go for it this year, and if they do, what do they give up to improve? But they're, you know, like many teams in the NHL, they have kind of two windows. They have a window this year, and then they're going to have a window in the future, but they have contractual contracts coming up to Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, and you can't keep everybody. So it's kind of an interesting time for the Maple Leafs. They are a very good team, but they're not a complete team, and what they are next year is going to be different. So I would, you know, again, I don't cover the team on a day-to-day basis, but I would expect them to make some kind of deal. I think they kind of have to go for it given their cap situation.
Well, of course, your blog, of course, Richard, is called The Media Circus. And I thought of you just because you're up there in what I've been reading about. And for people don't even need to understand who the player is necessarily here to sort of relate. But there's a defenseman named Jake Gardner who's a very good player. He's had some struggles. He had a really bad Game 7 last year, so part of it goes back to that. But they have just been booing him mercilessly. It is so hard, I would imagine, to play in that city sometimes when you're going through tough times. And there's a lot of people sort of fighting back, former players a lot of times saying, hey, this is not helping when you do this to a guy. I think of David Price in Boston who sort of played through it, overcame it, is playing for the Red Sox. But when you're in such a fishbowl like that, it can be very, very hard for a player if he's struggling.
Yeah, you know, I mean, booing happens everywhere. Booing's kind of it's both an interesting and a weird thing. If you pay your ticket, you clearly obviously have the right to express however you feel about an event or a player or a coach, you know, within the confines of no racism, you know, no sexism, et cetera. I'm sure in some places you can't curse, but, you know, let's be honest, it's just not realistic. But it doesn't necessarily ever motivate, at least if you talk to athletes, like the player. Like, no player is going to play, I think, better just because they got booed. So it's kind of an interesting thing in that a lot of times it can affect the player, but it can affect the player in the wrong way. And that's ultimately kind of, I would think, not what you want as a fan. In certain cases, and you've seen this a little bit with Jake Gardner, you know, he sort of, it may pass, but some players, for whatever reason, become the symbol of fans' frustration. And that player, whether rightly or wrongly, sort of gets booed during live events, gets talked about way too much on the radio or written about. And that happens in a lot of franchises, not just
yes.
here in Toronto, but I think elsewhere. A lot of times that player ends up leaving. Sometimes that's for the better of the team. Other times it is not. In this city, Larry Murphy essentially got booed out of town, went on to win Stanley Cups, and became one of the great defensemen in the league. So it doesn't always help, but it is a weird – it's a weird thing in 2019 because of because of social media, where you can really get to players in a much direct way. The whole act of booing is it still exists. I get it, but it feels like something from like 1970, to be honest.
So, Richard, looking at your latest blog, of course, you've got two really intriguing matchups in the AFC and NFC championship games on Sunday. You don't always have this, but is this maybe the formula that you could have as good a ratings as you've had in a while for the championship Sunday?
No, you want the Jaguars in there. you're absolutely right. Yeah, I don't think the NFL could have scripted a better Final Four in that if you look at whatever the permutations will be with the Super Bowl, you have no bad matchup. I think there is, at least in terms of viewership or interest, there's probably a best matchup, but all four potential matchups are phenomenal. We've seen a couple of them, including that Chiefs-Rams game, 54-51, which is, game of the year, electric to watch. This is just my interpretation. I know there are some people who probably have Patriots fatigue, and you guys would have a better feel of that than me, given that you're in Nashville, which is very, very far away from New England. So you'd kind of be an independent arbiter of this. But to me, the league, and I'm sure I've said this on your show way too many times, the NFL markets itself through quarterbacks. That is essentially how this league has been run for 50-plus years, going back to Johnny Unitas versus, whoever, Namath, to today when it's, Brady versus Goff. So if the Saints and the Patriots play, you have Breeze versus Brady, two Hall of Famers for sure, greatest quarterback in the history of the game in Brady. You have two guys who have not necessarily played against each other a lot. I looked this up. I think they've only played against each other five times during their career over, 16 years. You have two very, very huge fan bases that sort of tune into their football teams. They over-index their market size. And so I think in terms of potential matchups, at least to get crazy viewership if the game is close, I think that Patriots Saints one is it. At the same time, again, look at all those different matchups. You just have such interesting potential games because of the quarterbacks that are there. Mahomes, Goff, Breeze, and Brady, represent the future of the game, the present of the game, and the past of the game. So if the NFL has an incredible ratings year, and they have just hit it out of the park with this Final Four.
Yeah, they've got to be salivating for sure. Richard, one maybe on a note, we won't take as much time on this, but I know there are a lot of people in this listening area that have grown up because you can get 700 AM in Cincinnati, WLW, pretty easily, and there's a ton of people who for generations have been listening to Marty Brenneman, and he announced the other day that this will be his last year coming up. He's just one of those guys. There's not as many as there were that just spend such a long period of their career with one team, and he is just so synonymous with the Reds.
Yeah, and the same week Steve Bless of the Pirates announced he was retiring at the end of 2019. So two iconic broadcasters. The one thing about Brenneman, and I've talked to him a couple of times, and obviously I know his history with the Reds, he is one of the few broadcasters, and he did this more earlier in his career than late, who would criticize the team.
I think he's the last.
He really, and it's no question about it.
He is
more unique. He's more unique than anybody that I've heard.
Well, think about it today.
He's not afraid to do it.
Who would be in that category and get away with it? I would say none. I think he is the last of that dying breed, in my opinion.
He's up there in terms of the last of radio. The group in New York, Gary Cohen, Ron Darling, and Keith Hernandez sort of can get away with it a little bit. But again, they're on TV. They have standing because two of those guys are very well known. Ron Darling has another job at Turner. So, you have some flexibility when you have other employments to sort of be more honest. But Brenneman is so rare in terms of, sort of like it's a sort of a cliche, like the old Howard Cosell cliche, but sort of telling it like it is when it has to be told. Having listened to so many Homer broadcasts over the years, and again, before I moved up here, I had the Yankees, John Sterling and Susan Wallman, who are admittedly beloved by Yankee fans, but if you are not a Yankee fan, you know, you might as well be listening to like China Central Television. It's like it's propaganda city. And so Brenneman basically is he was kind of amazing that he did that. By the way, did that in a market in the Midwest where you'd kind of expect it to be the other way. You kind of expect the broadcaster to be an over the top homer like Hawk Harrelson. So he's had an incredible career. You know, an absolute Hall of Famer at what he did. And the other thing too is Brennemans are part of a dynastic broadcasting group. You know, his son, Tom, has had a great career. And, you know, when you think of, like, the all-time families of broadcasting, you know, the Careys, the Brennemans, the Alberts, you know, he's part of, like, he's part of that very small fraternity of father-son broadcasters, both father and son having really significant careers.
He took over the booth in 1974, replacing
Al Michaels. Yeah. How about that? Good trivia.
Think about 74, meaning that he was there for the Big Red Machine.
Yep.
You know, Rose, Morgan, and Foster, all the way to the modern day Reds. That is incredible to just think about.
No doubt about it. Richard, good to hear you. Thanks for doing this. We'll do it again soon.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Richard Dyche.